This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am joined by Sherry Antoine, Executive Director of Afro Crowd. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start a little bit. Tell me a little bit about where you're from. And
okay, so I actually grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Danbury, Connecticut. Though when my family came over from the Commonwealth of Dominica, which is a small island in the Caribbean, I was about 5 years old, going on six, and we came in through to the Bronx. My first time seeing the United States was seeing a whole bunch of lights that I never saw before as we're on our way to JFK. And my first memory was the water of the Hudson River and on the west side. And I'm looking down, I'm seeing all these lights. I'm like, oh my gosh, all these lights. And that's my first impression of the United States was New York City. And we moved to Danbury when I was about 12 years old.
How were those early years in the Bronx? Because even though you might not remember much, it's pretty influential.
I loved growing up in Parkchester. Parkchester is a part of the Bronx. I think most people are familiar with places like Castle Hill, where J-Lo is apparently from, that area. And I grew up near... one of my greatest memories was a place called The Oval in Parkchester in the Bronx. And growing up, going to literally there are parks everywhere. So as a kid, my parents were very watchful. And I would say I was a little sheltered, to be honest, because it didn't feel like there was anything, any place I couldn't go or couldn't do. But my parents were always nearby. So I have very good memories growing up in the Bronx. And I went to a school called IS-180 that really, it was a magnet school now that nurtured education, writing. That's where I first got a taste of real Black history. I had some good experience there too. I think they're a part of the reason I'm sitting here in front of you today. Because that education allowed me to learn more about the African diaspora, about Africa, and about, you know, that there were, you know, it nurtured talents that I probably didn't know I had yet. I'm also a violinist, and that's where I first learned how to read music. I didn't play the violin yet. That started in Danbury, but... I played the recorder, and every day during choir practice, we sang the Black National Anthem. So that's somehow where all this, I think, got started, this interest in Black history, in writing and the arts, in technology even, and also in education and what it can do for you.
You move on to Danbury.
Yes.
Was there a culture shock?
I think there was. That's where I was first experienced a racial kind of difference, if that makes sense, because someone called me an Oreo when I came to the United States. I had a very strong accent, from Dominica, a very strong Caribbean accent, and my voice was very low. And growing, I think a lot of immigrant kids will tell you that their parents encouraged them to kind of assimilate, to figure out how to blend in. And when I went to school in the Bronx, all my classmates were Black, Latino, Italian, Jewish. So I had to experience a lot of different diverse cultures without knowing it was diversity, because I just didn't know that was a thing yet. But that's what I experienced. So... I learned to speak like my parents put me in school a year later because they wanted me to experience the United States. So I spent a year in front of the television with my mom, who, by the way, was a teacher before we came to the United States. But that's another story. But she put me in front of the television And I learned to be American through Sesame Street and PBS. And thank you so much, PBS, for all that you do. And Sesame Street, who I learned we might be losing, which is a sad day for everybody. But also, you know, my neighborhood, my friends, and interestingly enough, the news, if that makes sense. When I came to Connecticut, it was at the back of a bus, a white kid called me an Oreo because I speak not differently than I do now because, that's just how it happened. And also I was like, what in the world? Why would he call me that? You know? And, it's an interesting day when you look at your hands and you're like, oh, okay. You know, but it's not like I didn't know my background. I didn't know that I was Black or Caribbean or female or an immigrant. It's not like I didn't know those things. I think those were the times where I started to learn that those things are considered an other, something different or something to poke at. And it's not like I didn't experience that in the Bronx. It's just that I was surrounded by other people like me. So this was the first time where a little boy, they know not what they do, you know, made me think about it a little bit more in a way that, made me feel separate, more separate. Now, I mentioned earlier that, I learned about Black history. I learned to sing the Black National Anthem. I learned about, growing my talents, et cetera, that was being nurtured in the public schools in the Bronx. And thank you so much to those teachers, especially PS106 and IS180. For making that so enjoyable and just something. There was a planetarium at my junior high school. I think I'm aging myself because they don't have junior high school. It's an intermediate school now. But I had a planetarium at my school at Co-op City in the Bronx. And so obviously, if that's all you know, that's what you expect. So I'm very thankful that my mom made me take those tests and get into that school, because that school is probably the reason I'm a musician, the reason I really love education, the arts, and think that I can do something in those areas. And also, very importantly, the reason that I really believe that history can be a powerful thing and can really change the way you see yourself as well as the way you see the world.
Tell me a little bit about your mom. Okay. The type of person she was, and an ethic or an ideal that sticks with you day in and day out.
Ooh, whoosh. So much to cover there, you know. I think for a lot of people's moms, I think a lot of times when you ask somebody, or if you were to ask me, who is the most, and this is Women's History Month, so it's a perfect timing, who is someone who has... especially a woman who has influenced you the most, or that you want to be like, or is your role model? Well, obviously, she for me is the top of the list. You know, I'm also very proud of my grandmother. My grandmother, who raised in the Caribbean, raised children who would go on to be a woman who. Maybe she didn't have the greatest means, but boy, did she do a lot with them. And she was born an orphan at a young age. And by the time she passed away, the prime minister came to her funeral. So amazing woman. I like to think of her as the mayor of the village where I spent a few years when I was a child. But my mother... She in Dominica, she was a teacher, and how did you get me here? My grandmother, she passed away right before the pandemic. So I say thank God, because I'm so glad she didn't have to experience that. But we went to her funeral, and unfortunately, so at the funeral, there were a lot of people who came who knew my mother when they were children, because my mom, she taught young kids. And my mother is a fairly young looking person. Mm-hmm. And a lot of her students look like they're the same age as she. But I remember throughout the time that we were there, people coming up looking for Miss Lucia. And I just never knew the kind of effect that she had. I mean, I knew she was respected, but I didn't know. Actually, I remember she told a story of when she there's a broadcast that was on while she was a teacher that promoted Creole or Patois in Dominica, and Dominicans were they were colonized by first the French, then the British, and of course became independent in the 70s. And so there was a movement to reconnect to the language spoken by a lot of people in Dominican Commonwealth, come of the Dominica. And that's a patois that is kind of a melange of languages, but definitely is something that is very Dominican, right?
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. We're listening to the story. I'm Jose Candelario, and I am all messed up right now. Sherry Antoine, Afro Crowd Executive Director, she's sharing the story of her mother and going back and witnessing firsthand the impact that her mother had on her community, and sharing how she was part of the movement to have people get in touch with their roots through patois.
Thank you for that. So this language, there's many different countries that have indigenous languages, right? Or languages that are spoken maybe at the home, but not in schools because of colonization and different reasons. A lot of us are encouraged to... or not us, I would just say a lot of people in general are encouraged to lean on the educational languages. And oftentimes those come from the West or from Europe, or depending on the, you know, which country was the last, you know, colonized it. And so in a lot of places, those languages are being forgotten. My mom took her kids to the radio station that promoted speaking patois. And so I remember her telling a story about that. It was a funny story that I won't tell here. But just to know that she did cool things like that with her students and encouraged them to, you know, to learn in different ways was great to me. And when we were unfortunately at the funeral, she had some students who came up to her, and again, they're older than me, you know, but they came up to her and they said, and they started calling her by what they called her as a teacher. And then they recited word for word a song she taught them to help them learn their alphabets. Now she taught very young kids. And the way she taught them this was by using their names in the song. So to this day, all these years later, you know, and she's no longer a teacher, but all these years later, they remember the song word for word. And I have them on video singing it back to her. And that is how they learned to speak, because of an educator like my mom. So to me, that's a powerful signal of the importance of education and the importance of, you know, using your creativity to make impact in what you are sharing, right? So I'm not saying it's the same thing, but a large part of what we do with this week Wikipedia programs and projects is to share knowledge. Wikipedia is an open, free knowledge resource that we harness to in many different ways in the community. But one of them is to amplify knowledge, but also creativity in learning about knowledge, and also using it to amplify things like learning languages and preserving culture.
We're not even there yet.
Okay.
You are jumping ahead. I know you want to get to the, you want to get to the sales pitch. Let's go back a little bit, and we're going to talk about being a part of the culture shock when you get to Danbury, because it is a whole different world. Being, how is it now navigating somewhere when you do have an identity and you know it, yet the society tries to push one onto you? How did you navigate that, and where do you end up going to high school and then college?
Oh, thank you. So when you, number one, I also don't want to leave my father out of this. A big part of my understanding of the world is through my father, who was the brave one who came here first to get us established as a family. And he came by himself. He came and he came in part because of someone from the State Department happened to come to let me go back. My father was an agricultural person. I don't know what you would call it in what the equivalent would be in the United States, but he worked with, let's say, sort of a USDA type who would help farmers learn how to farm better. So agriculture being a very important in the Caribbean, especially, but also in our home country, is that, learning, teaching farmers how to make the most of their crops and cycles and so forth. So he came he brought us up as a family. But not just that, he experienced what it's like in truth to be an immigrant in the United States, and be, the ways that it doesn't matter where you're from, especially if you are brown or black, or, or if you have a different accent or a cultural background, how you're treated when you come as an immigrant. And right now, that's very, obviously very, that's a distinction that's in quite a bit in the news. And so that's also another thing that became important to me, is that experience. And also something that was important that he also emphasized to me growing up is the importance of knowing about the world, about looking beyond what you see in front of you. So coming, moving from different places and experiencing a different culture a new environment, because it could be, you grew up in, let's say you grew up in Connecticut from the time you were a child, right? And then you move to another part of the United States. That's also a different cultural experience. So he had to navigate that, and had to navigate that as a man with a young family too. So so in any case, to me and to them, education was very important. And also giving back was also important, because as you see, they're both public servants. And I know that you had something that you wanted me to answer that I missed.
You actually answered it.
I did.
Because in order for you to navigate the cultural shock moving from the Bronx to Danbury, you already had a foundation and an example in front of you that was laid by your father. So you overcame a lot of the obstacles unconsciously. So with that said,
a lot of kids in those situations do. Yeah.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here with Executive Director Sherry Antoine of Afro Crowd, who is now going to talk about Afro Crowd and the Wikipedia Edathon that is going to be taking place. So how do you get involved? How do you get to Afro Crowd?
Oh, thank you. So fast forward, I went to school. Eventually, I went to Lehigh University. Then I worked in Hartford for a while in the legislature. Then I went to grad school at American University to study. I got my degree in international management. And it's a Master of Public Administration. Along the way, I, from since college, and by the way, it was Danbury Public School that taught me how to use a computer. And so I was comfortable and confident in my computer skills when I went to college. And that's a public school that taught me this. So I started doing, I was in what's called an Inroads intern. Mm-hmm. Inroads is a program from Stamford, Connecticut. That gets internships for talented youth of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an inroader at a pharmaceutical company in New Haven.
Shout out to Inroads because they got me to Long Wharf Theater.
You are
and I did my summer
inroader.
Programs there. So yes,
no,
sir. Yes, ma'am.
Know.
Here we go.
Okay. FWC.
Very good. Continue on.
Oh, that's fantastic. So Inroads taught me basically everything that I needed to know to get going in the working world. And I worked at my internship for several summers. But I decided that I wanted to, eventually go into some kind of public service. Because one thing, like I mentioned, that I always felt, and because of my parents and so forth, is it's important to make a difference and give back in some kind of way. But more so to make a difference. I don't think the giving back came up yet. I wanted to do something that involved my community and that involved, using some of the things that I was learning in a productive way. And obviously, I was very interested in international, in immigrants and other, folks that have similar story to what I understood. And so that's why I went to grad school to study how to use that, especially in organization development or some kind of public outreach and so forth, since that's what I had worked in previously. Up to that point, I was doing a lot of organizing, whether it was with grassroots organizations or with campaigns and so forth. That's what I knew. So my background being in organizing, I got involved with organizations that had to do with women and girls because those were the areas that I was the most interested in, being a woman and having been a girl, but especially in an international context. So I got, I was the chair, one of the founding chairs of a group called Diaspora African Women Network, their branch in New York City. And in that leadership role, I connected with a lot of women who were working to amplify, each other, but also to amplify women in professional pursuits. And on the listserv for that organization, that's how I connected to a Wikipedian and a Haitian blogger and lawyer, we wear many hats, named Alice Backer. And she is the founder of Afro Crowd. Afro Crowd started about in 2015 officially. And so I joined up with her to kind of just help for a few months in that organizing capacity to help, with what she was doing. And I came on thinking, this sounds like fun. I'll try to do it for a little bit. I can. And I was already doing, at that point, I had moved to New York and wanting to, try different things out. And decided to work at an organization that focus on digital writing trends research in the Internet of Things at the time, and focus on emerging trends in the digital marketplace, which interestingly enough is something that I had started doing in my inroads. So it all comes full circle. And that's where she was looking for someone with my background. And it turned out to be such a great opportunity that here I still am, but now in this capacity.
I have a lot of, I'm going to touch on a sidebar discussion here in regards to organizations and and groups. African-American women, when they have groups of support, it is very distinguishable than any other support group that I see out there. Can you tell me why there is so much upliftment in that type of organization versus any other circle? I'm talking about even within Caucasians or even, but African-American women, when they get together, I mean, they really push each other up. Why is that? Why do you think that is, I should say?
I'm glad you made that distinction because I can only speak for myself. But I believe that it's because Black women lift each other up because we have to, because who else is going to do it? We're often in many cases, and I believe that that is improving, pitted against each other. I remember having a... I believe many of us know what it's like to be like the only in our field or in our organization or even in our office place. And when someone else is brought on who looks like us, now it's, you know, who's going to outdo the other, which one is better, who, you know. And so oftentimes we're pushed against each other. So one of the reasons that... that Semhara Aria founded Dawn, and she's an Eritrean who started in Washington, D.C., was because of necessity, because there were few areas where we had the opportunity to uplift each other in a professional setting and to encourage each other in our fields. And that has changed a bit since it started, but it could, especially now with the current climate, we need those spaces more than ever.
Thank you so much. Let's talk about the edit-a-thon that's going to take place at the Stetson Library on March 15th. Please, what should we expect as an audience when we attend?
Thank you, Jose. Mr. Candelaria. So I'm so excited about this event. It's going to be the first event that AfroCrowd will be holding as an individual organization. We've been here for other events with others, but as an organization in Connecticut. And obviously Connecticut being my hometown, my home state, I'm so excited that we're finally able to do something here. We're going to be at the Stetson Library, which everyone needs to visit, everyone. Especially if you're interested in learning more about Black authors, culture, music, art. I mean, just walking into the building, it'll just blow you away by how beautiful it is, the kind of resources that are available, the librarians themselves, how they're committed to the community. And you have to meet the head of the library. She's going to be speaking at the event. We're also going to have some food there. It's free. You'll be trained in a whole new skill. And if you're already a Wikipedia editor, you'll be connecting with other Wikipedians in the Connecticut area and the New York area. And on top of that, you know, you'll get to be a part of something where you're literally making history. We're going to, and to go back to where we were just talking about women being uplifted, this is during Women's History Month, and our focus is going to be we're highlighting Black history or Black women in history, especially notable Black women. We're hoping to highlight folks in the Connecticut area as well. And but even if you just want to come and see what's up, Roll Up will still feed you, you know, and you'll get to learn the basics of editing. Wikipedia, both if you want to add images, if you want to take photos. By the way, we're offering the opportunity to learn how to add photography or video or audio to the lexicon on Wiki. Wikipedia being the largest reference source of its, digital resource of its kind in the world. The fifth or sixth most visited website on the planet. That's a global project that started more than 20 years ago. So it's like stepping into, stepping into the halls of history, if you will. Because Wikipedia, especially in the last, I would say, the last 10 years maybe, has dominated as where the world goes to get its information, exemplified by even during the COVID era, during the pandemic, being the top used site for folks to keep up with what's going on. And that, for a lot of people, Wikipedia may not be seen, maybe be thought of as the way it started, as an experiment that experienced vandalism and so mm-hmm. forth. But because of that history, the community came together, and Wikipedia is a community more than it is just a site of people from all over the world, you know, all a bunch of different languages, that is not only influential, but respected for the way it protects the information.
I want to pause there and remind everyone, this is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Chevy Antoine from Afro Choral talking about the Wikipedia experience that's going to be taking place at the Stetson Library on the 15th at 1 o'clock. I think that before we go, because we're wrapping up, time has flew by.
Yeah, it happens when you're having fun.
There you go. Real quick, before you go, can you please touch about, you know, the importance of being knowledgeable about Wikipedia because of its use, but our ability to control the narrative of how our story is being told.
Yes, and you know what? At this point in time that... there's the greatest opportunity to be a part of the telling of your own story, the narrative of your own of your community, and of the world in general. And that is because of where we are with technology. Wikipedia represents not only, you know, an encyclopedia, but is an opportunity for educational content that is used everywhere and by everyone. The amount of eyes that see the information on there every day makes it a highly influential source. It's where we go to find out about almost everything. So if you're not included in that story, or if you're not a part of the telling of that story, that means that the story is of you is being told by someone else, and the you being our community and our history. So come be a part of it, and you can join us on the 15th at 1 o'clock at the Stetson Library to do so. And we'll take good care of you.
Beyond the 15th, how can they get in touch with you if they want to be, you know, find out what AfroCrowd is up to and how to get involved?
Thanks for asking. So you can go to AfroCrowd.org and connect with us a variety of ways. We're not only, you can connect with us on our connection page. You can even contact me directly, Sherry@AfroCrowd.org. You can also... connect with us online on social media. We're still on X at AfroCrowdIT. We're also on Blue Sky Social, and we're also on Instagram at AfroCrowd and Facebook at AfroCrowd. So there's many ways to connect, or you can just go on Wikipedia, look up AfroCrowd, and connect that way.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been a very delightful and insightful conversation with Miss Chevy Antoine.
And also, if you want to connect for the event, we will have that information on the social media and the site as well.
Chevy Antoine, Executive Director of Afro Choral, putting together a Wikipedia-thon, edit-thon, so you can learn how to control the narrative on the community known as Wikipedia at the Stetson Library on the 15th. Again, I'm Jose Candelario, and like always, thank you for listening.